Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, putting God into our hearts, our homes, and our lives. Our guests today are Terry and John Bozio. I will introduce them in a moment, but first my monologue. Some years ago, I agreed to take two neighborhood girls, both candy stripers at Children's Hospital, to lunch. Unfortunately, it was raining as we dashed into the cafe. "Damn," Nicole explained when we got inside. She shook the rain from her auburn hair and gasped, "I got water filled in a shoe." Her friend Maria flashed her horrified brown eyes at Nicole. "Watch your language," she chastised. "There are adults around." Since observing teens was my profession, I knew Maria wasn't shocked with Nicole's use of a four-letter word. I'm sure she had heard it before. Kids usually emulate the language they hear in their homes or school. Still, I thought I'd ask about it. "Is that a bad word, Maria?" I asked. "Well, my folks don't like it, and our youth pastor is against saying words like that. I don't think he uses them," Maria answered. "Well," I replied, playing devil's advocate, "aren't youth pastors and churches pretty much against everything?" "Oh, sure," Maria replied with resignation, "but they say it's best for you." Nicole interrupted with authority in her voice. "Most things churches say we shouldn't do aren't good for us anyway." Nicole's comment impressed me. "Like what?" I asked. Well, that was the beginning of a long and interesting discussion of everything from four-letter words to gluttony, obesity, AIDS, STDs, and yes, sex, abortion, and breast cancer. What a lunch. These girls professed a faith set in morals based on a compass of right and wrong. I was impressed. It had me thinking about how should we look at religion and God in our society. Abraham Lincoln's government of the people, by the people, for the people, has taken God out of schools. Will it actually cause our country to, quote, perish from the earth, unquote? And even though "In God We Trust" is the official motto of the United States of America, and is still on our coins and our paper money, efforts are being made to remove that phrase too. Many want "under God" scratched from the Pledge of Allegiance. So I ask, is it possible to hang on to God in such a secular society? For that answer, we'll turn to our guests. Today's guests have spent many hours discussing and writing ways about how to put and keep God in our hearts, our homes, and generally as the center of our lives. John Bozio, former chairman of Catholic Media Production, has become a great friend of mine since he asked me to host his radio show more than 2 years ago. John was born in Italy and has been in the United States since 1965. He has a master's degree in theology from St. Paul College in Washington, D.C., and a master's degree in counseling from the University of Missouri. He has a certification in marriage and family therapy and from the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. John and Terry have his wife of 48 years, have two daughters and one grandchild. Terry was born in Burlington, Vermont, and has a bachelor's degree in management and human relations from Trevecca Nazarene University in Nashville. She worked in faith formation ministry for several years at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Nashville, where they are members. They have both worked extensively in parish and diocesan ministries. Though they are retired, they remain active in family ministry, serving parishes and dioceses around the country. They are members of the National Association of Catholic Family Life Ministers. They lead couples retreats and workshops on family ministry for deacons and priests. The Bozios wrote Joined by Grace, a marriage preparation program from Ave Maria Press. They produced three parish-based marriage enrichment programs, Six Dates for Catholic Couples, The Beatitudes, A Couple Path to Greater Joy, and Four Dates for Catholic Couples, The Virtues. They also wrote Joined by Grace, a Catholic prayer book for engaged and newly married couples. That's a lot of accomplishments for a retired couple. Welcome, Terry and John, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Thank you so much for being our guests.
Dr. Parr, it's an honor for us to be here on your show.
Yes, Dr. Parr, thank you for your invitation.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and I look forward to it for a long time. So let's just get right to it. My first story, did it bore you? I tried to illustrate that some of our kids do have a moral compass, and it seems to me that they got that compass from their parents and from their church. Isn't that what you and Terry are trying to do, John? Teach people how to pass the compass on to their children?
Absolutely. That has been the effort that we have made for many years. And, you know, even what we have learned is from directly from our family, you know, dealing with our children and trying to identify those key learning moments in which, with a little bit of advice, you can help redirect the compass. And Terry has a great story about that regarding one of our daughters.
Yes.
Well, tell us about it, Terry.
Teaching our families to pass on the compass of their faith to their children is what we hope to accomplish with the work that we have been doing. To draw an example from our family, I copied a friend or mimicked a friend based on something that she had done. And she has this tradition or ritual where she keeps a prayer table. And on the prayer table is a cloth and a candle that she keeps lit. And so I asked her what about that, you know, what does that mean? And she said, well, if you ask me to pray for you, I light the candle. And when I pass and see the lighted candle, when I pass by, I stop and say a prayer. And I thought, that's a really lovely idea. So we had an island in our kitchen, and I put a placemat in the center of the island and put a candle on it. I put prayer cards and sometimes things that John had brought home from his travels when he was working. Religious items, right. Like an icon of Mary from Russia and a beautiful crystal statue of Mary. And just different things like that, religious objects. But we would light the candle, and like my friend did. And when some people ask for prayers, I would say, I've lit the candle. And now, even today...
Our
daughter came home one day, and she just paused, and she looked at the...
She was in high school.
Yeah, she was in high school. And so she looked at the island, and she looked at the candle that was lit, and she said, do you know how weird this looks? And I said, well, Lord, this is our faith. This is what we do.
Well, it's because she had invited a friend to our house who was not Catholic. And so she was feeling embarrassed or not knowing what to say to her friend, and she said that. So this was an excellent opportunity for us to say, hey, we are Catholic, this is what we believe in, and this is important to us. Mm-hmm. If you want to explain that to your friend, I think that those are the things you need to say. And so kind of directing her priorities, what's important, what's not important.
Right.
That's a very interesting, very good story. Reminds me, and I have the book on my shelf, probably have it too. It's My Life with the Saints by a Jesuit priest. I've forgotten who it is now. But his first, he talks about saints that he's met through his life. And the first saint he talks about was St. Jude, because he said he was having a terrible time in algebra. And he knew he could never do it by himself. He said, so he said that St. Jude was a patron saint of impossible cases. So he got the statue for a buck, and he had it on his dresser. But when his friends came over, he would take and hide it in his sock drawer so they wouldn't see it. So he called it St. Jude of the sock drawer. And he prayed with St. Jude. And he said, I passed algebra. But that's just one of his many stories that he tells. And I think those stories are so good because they remind us that in your case and in the priest's case, we are sometimes embarrassed by our faith, but that doesn't stop us from practicing it. And then later on, we're able to teach others what we've learned. And I think that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that story. Mm-hmm. Well, now, in a couple of weeks, I think it's May 8th, is that right? May 9th? May 8th.
May 8th.
You guys are speaking together on a marriage conference called Together in Holiness. Tell us about that conference.
Dr. Parr, We would be one of three speakers at the conference, together in Holiness Conference. The first speaker will address the presence of God in a couple's marriage. The second one will talk about the importance of praying together. And we will talk about the sacredness of our home, of our life at home. In fact, the title of our talk will be, Your Home is a Holy Place, a Sacred Space. And we hope that we can have many, many people come to hear the insights of the conference.
Well, it sounds very interesting. And who is your audience?
Well, our audience is really all couples, all ages, because we are talking about marital and family spirituality, which it applies to whole, to everyone. And really, what we want to, the point the conference is trying to make is something that you already have said, is that the spirituality of family life and marriage is really living in God's presence every moment of our life and learning to do so as we go along. Unfortunately, we forget that God is there. And I know there are times where our tradition reminds us that there are things that Catholics do to remind themselves of God's presence in their life, in their home. For example, you know, we have crucifixes, we have statues of Mary, we have the blessed palms, we have many different traditions. And so those things have to, things that we need to remind ourselves to create a space in our home where the rituals that we have, the prayers that we say, help us become better person who can worship God in our home with our own life, because our Christian life is an act of worship in itself.
You know, I think that the candle in the kitchen that you talk about, Terry, was such a great example of that. We have a candle in the sanctuary to indicate the presence of the Eucharist. And now you have one in your kitchen to indicate God in your home. I think that's really a good story. I'm kind of nervous about keeping a candle that when no one's there, you know, because...
Well, and you know what, we... Sometimes it's the votive candle, it's a tall votive candle that's glass. When the wax is at the top, we blow it out before we leave the house.
Yeah. It's nothing like being safe.
Right.
It reminds me of one of my older sister, always had a holy candle. She had the beeswax candles or less. She always had a couple of those in her house. And she said, whenever a storm came up, she would light the candle. And she says, and then her kids would always laugh at her about this. So one day she says, is it wrong to do that? And I said, well, what's this candle represent to you? And she said, well, it represents prayer. It's my prayer to God to keep us safe. And I said, well, then how can prayer be wrong? So she was happy. She went back and told her kids that Uncle Parr said it's okay. In the Old Testament, God was, if you can use, I know a better word, held, for lack of a better word, God was held in the Ark of the Covenant. Now we keep the Eucharist, the living body of Christ, in the tabernacle. But God is present in all of us at baptism. How is he present in our home? How does he get there? How can we make that? Can we manipulate where God is?
Dr. Parr, I don't think we can manipulate God, but we do need to invite him into our life and into our home, and we need to make room for him.
Dr. Parr, you said, and I agree with you, God is in our life because we became members of Christ's body at baptism. That is true. At baptism, we entered into a personal relationship with the Trinity through Christ, and we continue to strengthen that relationship throughout our life with the participation in the sacraments, especially the Eucharist and the sacrament of penance, and in a special way through the sacrament of matrimony. There is a passage from the Catechism I would like to read that speaks to couples about Christ's presence in their marriage. The Catechism teaches, Christ dwells with the spouses, gives them the strength to take up their crosses and to follow him, to rise again after they have fallen, to forgive one another, to bear one another's burdens, to be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ, and to love one another with supernatural tender and fruitful love. And the reference for that, if anybody wants to check it out, is 1642, paragraph 1642.
John, I don't know how that could have been written better. It was just so well done. It reminds me that, you know, the catechism, I think, is like the other inspired words of God. And I think we need to be attentive to it. One thing that bothers me, and I didn't discuss that with you before, John, but I remember a few years ago, many times, we would go to meetings, and before the meeting, there's always us talking together. And we had a group of women who would get together before every meeting, and they would try to see who could tell, in my opinion, who could tell the worst story about their husband, who had the worst husband. And they would go on and on. So finally, one day, they were talking. I said, you know, I said, let me ask you something. You're all smart women. Why did you pick such awful husbands? Well, they all got defensive right away about their husband wasn't the sense. Then why talk bad about him? You talk bad about him, and it starts making you think inside bad things about your husband. Say good things about your husband, especially to people, to the community, to other people, so they can get the idea that you have a happy marriage. And if you live that happiness, it will show in you and make your whole life better. And maybe that's poor psychology. I'll leave that up to you, John.
Well, I think that's a very good psychology. You know, when you talk bad about your spouse, you're talking bad about yourself. Yeah. So it's exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the worst things people can do, because it's just the beginning of deteriorating the relationship even further. Because now you go public with some qualities of your husband that or wife that you don't agree with or that you find uncomfortable. And it's just tearing down that image that the spouse needs to be in your life, rather than really should be talking to your spouse and saying, these are the things I don't like about you or that you're doing that I'm not comfortable with.
Well, I appreciate it. In your book that you've asked me to review, How to Grow Your Catholic Family, you talk about the sacredness of the home and refer many times to what St. Pope John Paul II called domestic church. I interviewed Bishop Spalding a few weeks ago, and he was talking about domestic church. So what is your concept, John and Terry, of the domestic church?
Well, the concept of the domestic church did not originate with Pope John Paul II. It actually is a new concept in the long history of the Catholic Church. It is first mentioned in the documents of the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s. And it is its acceptance of the concept has grown with each following pope. Each pope has talked about it, and it kind of expanded the understanding of the domestic church. Where does the idea come from? The idea comes from our understanding of the church, what the church is. The church is not Rome, the Vatican. The church is not the diocese. The church is not the parish. Pope Francis tells us that the church is a family of families. The church is a big family, and each of our families is an essential part of it. Each home is part of the universal church. In this sense, our own family is the church in our home, the domestic church. So that is where the concept of the domestic church comes from. It's an understanding of how we perceive the church, that it's a church that includes everyone in the borders run into the home. In fact, the home is kind of the cradle of the church, because this is where future members of the church come from. This is where we form the new citizen and pass on the faith to our children. So the home as a church is something that we need to think about and learn about and explore and reflect on, because it can enrich very much for all of us what home means to us.
Well, I think, too, I always think of the concept of where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with them. So I think that, to me, that's sort of where the church comes from within our home. But I'm reminded, my cousin was studied for the priesthood in Rome, was ordained in Rome, and was a priest for a few years, was a missionary in Bolivia.
And during his time there, he met this nun, and as things happened, they found love, and they got authority to be relieved of their vows, and were married. And when we would visit them, they could not have a public ministry, but they could have a private ministry. So when we would visit them, we'd have mass in the kitchen. And we sit around the table, it was really, really touching that the home was the church. And I thought, and this was before, well, it wasn't before John Paul, yes, but it was before the idea of domestic was popularized. I thought, this is where it's at, because we can pray at home. And here we had this priest saying the mass with us. He gave beautiful little homilies. He was a brilliant man. But I thought that's what my concept was. And then as we spread it now to, if everybody having their own little celebrations in home, we can't have mass, we can have other celebrations. And your candle lighting is one that you do for prayer, the candle my sister did as a prayer for help. All those things, I think, are make a part of that. The nativity sets we have, the crucifix reminding us, the saints we need to pray with, even though it's in the sock drawer. Okay, get them out, put them down. John, the idea that the home is a sacred place, a sanctuary, even a domestic church, is thrilling, maybe even awesome. But on another level, it seems almost sacrilegious to think that my house is a church. How do we interpret that?
Well, let me start, and then Terry can add to this. But you know, our home is a holy place, not because we make it. You know, we can hang all sorts of crucifixes and statues, and we can pray all day long. There's nothing we can do that can make our home holy. Our home is a holy place, a sacred place, because God is there. God is the one who makes our home holy. And that's why, and he comes to us, as we said just a few minutes ago, through our relationship with him at baptism, and then again in our sacramental marriage. And the only thing we can do is making sure that we develop, nurture that relationship with God present in our home, and find ways to remember that God is there, that God is, as I mentioned earlier, and you mentioned about having a crucifix, the statues of Mary, the Nativity, all of those things are great things that help us remember. One of the things that we did, and I'll let Terry tell the story, which is something that not every family has the opportunity to do, but we had it and we took advantage of it, is obviously having your home blessed, but a little more. Terry, tell the story about
The house we live in now is smaller than our previous home because we were ready to downsize, to do something a little smaller but comfortable. And so we would come, we lived in Hermitage at the time, and we would drive to Mount Juliet to check on the progress.
You were building a home.
Yes, we decided to build a house in Mount Juliet, and they had one lot left in this neighborhood, and we took it because we knew we would build a small house on the lot, a smaller than the ones that are around us. And so we came to the house one evening, and our builder was still in the house, so it was unlocked. And we came in, and he said, "Tomorrow I'm going to be putting up the drywall." And so I asked him if we could write on the studs. And he said, "Well, sure, but you've got to do this. Like, go home, or you know, get what you need. But it's going to be locked at 5:00." So we rushed home, and I grabbed a bunch of different colored markers and a Bible. And we started going through, I would read passages to John. And then we decided where we would write those passages. Like, what room does this passage belong to?
This was on the studs.
This was on the studs, right, right. No, we're marking, we're writing on the studs. So they're behind the drywall. But they exist in this house. In every room, there's a scripture verse. We're getting a little confused about which verses are where, but we have pictures.
We have pictures to tell us where they are.
Just to remind us, and then there'll be little, because it was just, you know, the wood, there's big spaces. So you can get a after a while, you kind of say, oh, yeah, that's over here.
At the point of the story is that we need to do whatever we can to remind ourselves of the sacredness of our home, the building. And that home is also the place that where we live in, the relationships that we have in the home and the prayers and all of that.
It sounds like you're right next door, next to St. Jude of the Sacra, you have the Bible verses in the in the drywall spaces.
Between the walls.
Well, thank you so much. We're just about out of time. Thank you, John and Terry. I really appreciate you spending your time with us. And thank you for all you do for couples, families, and communities. And a special thanks, too, to our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't exist. And let me remind you that starting April 26th, you can read my Parenting Matters column from the Epoch Times on www.parenting-matters.com. Now, before we sign off, one quick story. When Mary and I were children, there were many more priests than politicians. Perhaps that's the reason things were relatively peaceful for a few years. Back then, every little church had a priest, and every priest had a live-in housekeeper who cleaned, cooked, and in many instances kept the church books for the priest. Mary, at the enchanting age of 4 or 5, thought the priest was God, and the priest's housekeeper was Mrs. God. I was not there when the priest first heard her call his housekeeper Mrs. God, but I can see and hear his laughter from his many decades later. Today, with fewer priests, more of the responsibility of teaching religion to the children lies in the hands of their parents. Many of these parents are not prepared to handle such a task, and for the most part, it's not their fault. But thanks to men and women like John and Terry, the need to teach adult Catholics about their religion is being fulfilled. So join me in thanking them for this work and for praying for their success. Thank you once again, Dr. Terry and John Bozzio. Now for your homework, sit down with your family and listen again to the Bozzio's talk on wbou.parenting-matters.com. Then discuss with your loved ones what makes your home a holy place, a sanctuary, a domestic church. If it is not, then decide what things need to be done to make your home that place. Then go back to wbou.parenting-matters.com and tell us about your discussion, what you plan to do about it. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at wbou.org.